Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
We're going to put the accent on levity to lighten your day today. Welcome to the show, 888-914-9149. Or you can email me, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. And you can follow me on Twitter, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And the show account is at Cale Clark Show. Well, it is Thursday, March the 3rd, and it is the second day of Lent. So y'all still feeling like spiritual athletes after your day of fasting yesterday on Ash Wednesday? Well, allow me to tempt you with some beer and cookies. Now, what do I mean by that? This isn't frivolous at all. There's a deep, deep spiritual point to this. And I read about this, and producer Lucas sent me this article, and I just couldn't believe it because it sounded so great. It sounded like such a great idea. You know, there were some monks in the 17th century that did a beer fast for Lent. They survived on pretty much nothing but beer and water for the entirety of Lent. And that was their habitual practice. And believe it or not, there was a guy in our times, in our modern age, a brave soul who wanted to see if he could do it himself. And so I want to tell you about this. There's an article that came out in the Catholic News Agency, CNA, by Matt Hadrow. Matt Hadrow's a good guy in Washington, and he's kind of the political pundit of the CNA. And obviously, like, a lot of us are focusing on giving up, maybe things like beer, along with sweets, maybe some tech, maybe staying off social media for Lent. That's actually hard for us to do here at Relevant Radio, because believe it or not, Relevant Radio, we get more listeners than at any other time of the year during Lent. That's what I'm told. So I'd like to fast from social media, but I don't think it's actually a good idea evangelistically, because it's a great chance to reach people who are looking for some spiritual sustenance. And speaking of sustenance, there were some Catholic monks who had a liquid-only Lenten fast. This is according to Matt Hadrow. So back in the 1600s, the group of monks are known as the Paulaner monks. Probably has something to do with St. Paul. I don't know much about this particular order of monks, but I do know a lot about their beer, because I actually enjoy their beer a lot. I'm really a fan of wheat beer, as I've mentioned to you. I love wheat beers, Bavarian wheat beers, and they make some of the finest stuff out there. So in the 1600s, Paulaner monks moved from southern Italy, which was their original base of operations, to Bavaria. And there's actually, Matt Hadrow says, if you go on the Paulaner website, there's actually a video by the Braumeister, the brewmeister of the Paulaner brewery. He's not a monk. It's now become a company, of course, but it starts off with the monk's recipes. And his name is Martin Zuber. He's the brewmaster. And I was going to actually play a clip of the video, but it's all in German, so I said nein to that idea. But he explained this. As it's translated on this video, he said this, that basically the monks needed something other than water to sustain them in their Lenten fast, because they had a very, very strict practice. They actually were not allowed to consume solid food at all during Lent. So they're like, well, what are we going to do? Like, we need to work, we need energy. So they turned to beer, and they concocted a very, very strong brew, and they put tons of carbohydrates and nutrients in it, and they called it liquid bread. Liquid bread, I like that. And that technically would not break the fast. So, hey, we're not eating anything solid. And it was called, this is the earliest version of what's known as the Doppelbock style of beer. And eventually they started selling it. And that was the first product that was ever put out by the Paulaner Brewery, which actually got started in 1634. And the name of this beer, they even gave it a name. They called it Salvator. Salvator. And that name Salvatore is actually, it's kind of an amalgamation of Sankt Vater in German, Sankt Vater, which means Holy Father. So there you go. It's the Holy Father beer. And anyway, so Paulaner beer is still really popular today, especially at Oktoberfest in Munich. I like their wheat beers. I've never had this Doppelbock beer. Maybe you have, but it started off as being a Lenten thing. And so there is a modern day journalist who wanted to see, is this really even possible? And in 2011, he actually recreated their Lenten fast with the liquid bread. And his name was Jay Wilson. He was a Christian, probably an evangelical Christian, not sure. But he was a journalist, and at the time, he was working for a county newspaper in Iowa. And he had this idea. He actually partnered up with a local brewery, and because he himself, this guy Jay Wilson, this journalist, he was a little bit of a brewmaster himself. He brewed his own beer. He was known as being quite good at it. So he brewed his special Doppelbock, just like the Paulaner monks did, and he decided to do nothing but drink beer and with a little bit of water mixed in over 46 days. Because, you know, Lent is never strictly 40 days. It's kind of a symbolic 40 days. We can get into that another time. But so he did what they did. He ate no solid food. And he actually did this as part of his job. Like he was writing a story about this. He was kind of blogging about this as well. Can you imagine, you know, you're working in this county newspaper and come up to the boss. Hey, boss, got an idea for you. Do you mind if I just do this story? It involves me having a few brewskis at my desk during the day. You know, I'm going to be kind of taking one for the team here, suffering in the name of journalism. And he had four beers every day during his workday and five on the weekends, five on Saturday, five on Sunday. Okay, you might think, how in the world was this guy not inebriated all day long? Now, clearly, drunkenness is a sin. It's a mortal sin, so we got to stay away from that. But he wrote about this. He had a blog for CNN at the time, way back in 2011, and he wrote about this. And I found the blog. And his work, his article about this was called The Diary of a Part-Time Monk, Jay Wilson. And it, as he says, it sounds like a frat boy stunt, but it actually has deep roots in Catholic tradition. And so that's what he did. He made his own liquid bread as a brewmaster, packed in a lot of carbohydrates, calories, vitamins. And so when he's researching this, Jay Wilson said that there was really not too much information out there about how the monks actually did this. So he said, the only way I can figure out if this is true is to do it myself. And so that's what he did. And he said this, he said, quote, I knew that I could stretch four beers over the course of a day and function well, but I hadn't planned for the media attention that the investigation spurred. I found myself giving more than five interviews a day to the likes of CNN, BBC, Fox News, the Chicago Tribune, the Catholic Herald, Men's Health Magazine. Yeah, how to get fit over Lent. Drink four beers a day and call me when you're done. So this became a huge attention grabbing scenario for Jay Wilson. Everybody wanted a piece of him, radio, TV. And he actually said, I can't handle this because my whole thing is I want to be like the monk. So he actually turned down pretty much all of the invitations that he had to be interviewed. And so, I mean, he did it for like 2 weeks, but then he said, I can't do this. I need to fast from the media. I need to fast from my phone. I need to fast from email as well as from the food. So he said he learned something from this too. He said, A, other folks found the story pretty captivating. And B, he found that, yeah, you actually can live on liquid bread. You can live on beer and water for 46 days. So he figured out a lot of incredible things on this journey. He said, number one, the human body is an amazing machine, We actually don't ask enough of our bodies, in his opinion. This is Jay Wilson, the guy who actually did the beer fast for all of Lent for 46 days. Because usually we cram ourselves full of junk food. We don't really exercise enough as we should. And he says our body is capable of much more than what we give it credit for. It can climb mountains. It can run marathons. And yes, it can even function without food for long periods of time. So he said at the beginning of his beer fast, he felt hungry for the first 2 days. And then he switched gears. His body switched gears. And he said it was unbelievable what happened to him because he got into this focused state. He couldn't believe it. He said that he was actually in a, quote, tunnel of clarity, unlike anything he'd ever experienced, end of quote. So that's kind of interesting. It actually made him focus more. I don't know. Maybe this is an excuse for us to try it. But he did say, though, that his sense of smell, even though his hunger kind of went away, his sense of smell was really strong. So, like, oh, man, he'd smell a cheeseburger and be like, I really, really want that. I really, really want that. And it was kind of a penance for him. And he had to cook dinner for his kids, for his boys. And eventually he kind of, you know, it became just a regular thing, and he kind of got over that. And another spiritual fruit that came out of this was that he realized how big of a difference there is, how big of a gulf there is between our wants and our needs. And that I think is a good spiritual point that he got out of this. He said, look, I wanted a cheeseburger, but I didn't need a cheeseburger. I also didn't need a bag of chips. I didn't need a donut in the middle of the day. I needed nourishment. And my Doppelbach beer, while lacking the protein that might have provided enough backbone for an even longer fast had I sought one, it was enough to keep me strong and alert, despite the fact that he had a huge deficit in calories. He lost 25.5 pounds during the beer fast. That's incredible. Imagine drinking 4 beers a day and 5 beers a day on the weekend, and then you lose weight. I got to get in on this. I got to get in on this. So, but he actually said, believe it or not, it was a huge school of self-discipline and just fasting from food. He was like, man, it kind of like let his body almost detox. You know, people do these cleansing detoxes. I guess that's one way to do it. And he said, I've never felt so rejuvenated physically or mentally. So he said, yeah, the monks, they did do it. This was not only possible, it was actually probable. It was accomplishable. If that's a word, I don't think it is, but they did this every Lent. They engaged in this practice to understand that it was sacrificial, yes, but it was a way of continually refining themselves. And so I really like this. I really, really like this article. And this was, I had to pull back in the Internet Archives for this. This is from Jay Wilson. He wrote this blog for CNN back in 2011. So I guess it's true. There is no civilization without fermentation, and he proved it. And he became even more civilized during his beer fast. How about that? That was really, really cool. So just to reiterate what you do need to do during Lent, you don't have to do the beer fast. that's kind of a above and beyond the call of duty. You don't have to give up solid food, but you do have to do penance. And of course, we imitate Christ during his wilderness experience, his 40 days in the wilderness, kind of recapitulating in his person kind of what Israel went through. Just as Israel was called out of Egypt, he came out of Egypt as a young boy and also went into the desert during this period of preparation for his ministry. So in case you didn't catch this yesterday during Ash Wednesday, if you're a healthy adult Catholic, between the ages of 18 to 59, you have to fast on Ash Wednesday and Good Friday. And so, you know, you're encouraged to do other fasting as well. Abstaining from meat on Ash Wednesday and Good Friday, that's a requirement for those 14 and up. So there's no limit, age limit on that one, but you don't have to fast once you hit 60. Technically speaking, many still do. If they're in good health, they're able to do it. Consulted with their doctor, whatever the case may be. Here's what the U.S. Catholic bishops said way back in 1966. They had a pastoral letter on fasting. Matt Hadro pulled out a quote for us. No Catholic Christian will lightly excuse himself from so hallowed an obligation on the Wednesday which solemnly opens the Lenten season, and on that Friday called Good, because on that day Christ suffered in the flesh and died for our sins, end of quote. So again, the fast on those days is one full meal, two smaller meals. When you put those two smaller meals together, they can't add up to a single full meal. So some people try to get around that by making their one meal ginormous. So, hey, the two snack meals are pretty good size too, but they're not as big as the meal I just had. Okay, well, that's not really the spirit of Lent, obviously. So that's what it's all about. So those are the essentials. Also, another essential, abstinence from meat for all Catholics on Fridays in Lent in the United States. Daily Mass, strongly encouraged. Also, other Lenten days you can fast as well. Almsgiving, studying the scriptures, really, really important. That's one of the things that we do a lot on the Faith Explained program on Relevant Radio, and you can check the archives, get some of our past series, the Genesis series, the Revelation series, very popular, all kinds of more series that we're posting constantly on that website. You can binge listen to them. It's a lot of fun. Actually, right now on the Faith Explained program, we're going through sort of an explanation of the church's teaching on war and peace, given the conflict, the war in Ukraine. And so that's been an interesting series. I've learned a lot just preparing those lessons, and we're almost through that. You're not going to want to miss tomorrow, because we're going to talk about what are the four components of the church's just war theory. What makes a war just in the eyes of the church? We're going to cover that. And then Monday, we're going to talk about the atomic bomb. Was it moral that the United States actually dropped the atomic bomb? This is an important question, too, because obviously Vladimir Putin has raised the specter of the nuclear option in this conflict, and I don't think he's bluffing. He is just crazy enough to do it. I wouldn't put it past him, and I'll talk about that maybe on another episode. Some good evidence that we ought not to call his bluff on this, but having said that, those are the essentials. Those are the essentials of Lent. But obviously, rededicating ourselves to mental prayer, the Rosary, which we can you can do it on the Family Rosary Across America tonight with Father Rocky at 7 p.m. Central. Stations of the Cross, obviously, especially on Fridays. We got a First Friday coming up tomorrow too. That's a good opportunity to get to Mass as well if you're able to do that. So, anyways, you might also want to think about the liquid bread fast, i.e. the Doppelbach beer fast. It actually does work in real life. I'll have to try it someday. Sounds delicious and also spiritually nutritious. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. But what is the controversy about cookies? I'll tell you what that is after the break. It has to do with the Girl Scouts and, believe it or not, Planned Parenthood and much more. We'll talk about that. 888-914-9149. Be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Whenever you call me, I'll be there. Yep, whenever you call me, I'll be there. And you can call right now, 888-914-9149. That's pretty smooth, eh, Lucas? I didn't even know that song was coming. So how about that? Speaking of calls, let's go to the phones right now. John is calling from Reno, Nevada. Hi, John. Hello,
hey,
John.
How are you?
I'm well. Yourself,
how
sir?
You? I'm doing good.
Good stuff. Good stuff. What's on your mind?
Well, my question was is, what is the purpose of putting the ashes on our head?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Ash Wednesday. And a lot of people don't know that, by the way, John, that you don't even have to be Catholic. Anybody can come in and receive ashes on Ash Wednesday. And many people do. Many people do, especially in big cities, St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City. Like, you'll have huge lineups of people wanting to receive ashes, and many of them are not Catholic. And some people are from other faiths. Some people are of no faith at all, and they walk into a Catholic church to receive the ashes. And there's something about this ritual, I think, John, that really does draw people in. And where it comes from in the Bible, there's a quote from Genesis chapter 3. And that's where this, when you receive the ashes, the priest or the minister will say, "Remember that you are dust, and unto dust you shall return." And that reminds us that, you know, we are creatures. We are not gods. We will die. And we are immortal in the sense we have an immortal soul, an eternal soul. But we're going to die. We're going to be buried. As one preacher said one time in a talk I heard, at the end of your life, they're going to put you in a hole in the ground. They're going to throw dirt on your face, and then they're going to go back to the church basement and have potato salad. Okay, that's what's going to happen. So what do we want our legacy to be, right? And We do have to, obviously, at that point, give an account of our lives to an unbiased judge, totally unbiased, Almighty God. And so I think really, John, it's a common human experience, sin, mortality. I think that's what draws a lot of people to Ash Wednesday. But here's the second part. Here's the second part, John. So the first thing that's said to you when you receive the ashes are, remember that you are dust, and unto dust you shall return. But then that's kind of the bad news part in a certain sense. But then there's a good news part. Repent and believe in the gospel. Believe in the good news. That's the good thing. That's the good thing, because for all of us who turn away from our sin, we trust in the forgiveness of Jesus, and we attempt with God's help to change our life, there is new hope. And by the way, when Jesus said, and this is a quote from Jesus, obviously, when he started his ministry, repent and believe in the gospel, that doesn't mean to intellectually know about Jesus, although that's part of it. Believe in the Bible means to become obedient to the gospel. Believe in the good news means don't just know about it, you've got to become obedient to it. That's the key. It's changing our life to become more like Jesus. That's really what Lent is all about. Does that make sense, John?
It does. Thank you.
Okay, you're most welcome. You're most welcome. Thank you very much for the call. Call anytime. That was John calling from Reno, Nevada. Very good question about the ashes. And by the way, in the Roman Rite, a good friend of the program, Father Harrison Eyre, said this on Twitter, I think today or yesterday. He said, don't forget that in the Roman Rite, the actual time-honored practice is putting the ashes on the person's head, not making the sign of the cross on their forehead, sprinkling the ashes on the top of their head. So that's how they do it in Europe. That's how they do it in Rome. That's how they do it at the Vatican, just so you know. So the way that we do it, I'm not quite sure how that got started. I'll have to do some research on that, but ashes on the top of the head is the actual prescription of the Roman Rite. Kind of interesting. So if you want to call in, if you have a question, 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Well, as I mentioned, I do want to tell you about not only beer. We've done a couple shows on beer, by the way, and they're actually really popular. We did a show called Beer in the Bible once, and I think producer Lucas has been able to track it down in the archives. And he has, I think he's going to put it in the show notes. He's going to link to it. Maybe we can tweet it out as well, Lucas, because I got a lot of calls about that. Even from priests who were like, man, I'm so happy that you had that show on the Bible, on Beer in the Bible. I really enjoyed that. So, hey, well, that's great. And maybe you can try that Doppelbach beer fast for Lent. And Lucas was saying during the break, that sounds like something that might be fun for a day or two, but then it really does become penitential. It's like, man, I thought this was my greatest, wildest dream come true, having four beers a day, but now it's like, oh, I have to do it again tomorrow. But yeah, I don't know how much inebriation comes into this, hopefully not, but I think they're spread out throughout the day. There you go. And I snuck away and had a Doppelbach during the last break. No, I didn't. I never, ever drank and host. Never drink and host. Not a good idea. I need all the brain cells I have functioning properly, which aren't too many, as you know, if you've been listening to me for any length of time. But I promised you not only beer, but cookies. Cookies. Now, that might be an odd combination, but believe it or not, there's actually a lot of beer and cookie recipes out there, and beer-infused cookies. I don't know if I want to try that, but 'tis the season for people selling and buying Girl Scout cookies. And believe it or not, This shocked me. This shocked me. I found this appalling. I saw this on a website called Insider. Girl Scout cookie sellers as young as 5 years old are being harassed for selling their cookies. Can you imagine this? What kind of a monster would do that? Why are people doing this? Well, first of all, the kids are getting lectured for selling quote-unquote unhealthy food. They're also being, people have a problem with the high prices of the Girl Scout cookies, which, as I'll explain, are maybe a little bit more than, I know that food prices are going up, but this is ridiculous in some people's minds. Are they worth the cost? I don't think it's that expensive, but they're like $5 a box or something for these thin mints or whatever other flavors they have. The other reason why kids are getting harassed by people, these girls are getting harassed, these Girl Scouts, is that there is a conspiracy theory linking the Girl Scouts and their cookie program with Planned Parenthood, who are obviously up to their eyeballs in the evil of abortion. We know that. They're the biggest abortion purveyor in the United States. And so is there any truth to that? Well, I'm going to deal with that as well, because a lot of people have this in their mind, and I want to talk about that. So anyways, just so you know, by the way, I didn't realize that they go all the way from 5 years old. They're called Daisies, Girl Scouts, all the way up to 16-year-old Girl Scouts, Senior Scouts. And no matter how old or young they might be, they're getting attacked and harassed by people. Maybe the pandemic has spurred this on. I don't think that's any real excuse for it. Nobody should ever be treating anybody like this. But there have been several interviews done with scouts, scout leaders, the parents. And the first complaint about the Girl Scout cookies is that they're not healthy. They're not healthy. I think we kind of know that cookies aren't necessarily the greatest health choice. But Una Hansen was interviewed for this piece. Una Hansen, who's a parent of a Girl Scout in Los Angeles, and she's volunteered at cookie booths with her daughter and her Girl Scout troop. And people will walk by and they'll make comments about weight gain and obesity, and they'll tell these little girls, you can't trust yourself to have the Thin Mints in the house. You're going to eat the whole box. I've probably done that myself a couple times, so that there is some truth to that. Not now, but when I was younger, like last week. No, that was when I was a kid. But they'll even yell at the girls, apparently. Passerby will yell at the Girl Scouts for quote-unquote poisoning people. Now, that's not nothing to a little kid. I mean, if you hear stuff like this, you hear these attacks over a few hours as you're trying to sell cookies, that is not very nice. And there's a lot of aggressive comments, people trying to frighten the girls about diabetes. You're going to become a diabetic. You're going to become overweight. And so this Una Hansen, the scout mom, she tweeted out just a few days ago on February the 3rd, she tweeted out, hey, listen, if you see the Girl Scouts and they're selling cookies, do not make comments to the kids about their weight or about that they might get fat. Because guess what? What's happened to a lot of young women is that they have heard comments like this when they were young, and they started developing eating disorders even when they were children because of stuff like this that people were saying to them. And one person responded to this tweet. A lot of people responded to this. This really touched a nerve. One responder said, she tweeted out, my chronically dieting mother allowed me one half of one Girl Scout cookie per week when I was a child. Another person said, thanks for the reminder, because she started receiving toxic messages about her body as a teen when she wasn't necessarily that petite, and she got a lot of comments, body shaming. And so this is really unfortunate. There's a big problem with this in society with girls, obviously. People coming up to the girls saying cookies make you fat, walking away. And this can really destroy a young child's self-esteem, a young girl's self-esteem. This is just so uncool. I can't believe people would do this. The truth of the matter is, according to researchers, that girls selling cookies, they're hundreds of times more likely to develop an eating disorder than to develop diabetes, juvenile diabetes. I'm not saying that's not an issue, juvenile diabetes, JD, but eating disorders are way more prevalent in girls. So, by the way, you might be wondering about the history of this practice. When did they start doing this? Back in 1917, the Girl Scouts of America first sold cookies. I guess they were home-baked at that point, but they went national during the 1920s, and in the 1930s, they started commercially baking the cookies. And right now, there are two bakeries that do the job, and there are 8 varieties available. I don't know what the other ones are. I know about the Thin Mints. Growing up in Canada, our version of Girl Scouts was called Girl Guides, and they had like basically 2 different flavors. There was chocolate or vanilla. And then they eventually brought out the mint ones too, which I really liked. Anyway, so apparently there are now 8 varieties of Girl Scout cookies in the United States. So the price of a box right now is $5, and all the profits go to Girl Scout councils, activities like outdoor programs, STEM experiences. Now, what does that mean? It's an acronym, if you haven't heard this, capital S, capital T, capital E, capital M, STEM. It stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. And there's a big effort, and I think a needed effort, to get more girls and women into these fields and get them excited about it. So anyways, this is a little bit pricey for some people because they're 55 cents an ounce for Thin Mints. And that's about 20. There's about 25 cents per ounce if you buy a pack of Oreos. And Oreos aren't the cheapest cookie out there either. There's always the no-name brand, right? But so there's a bit of sticker shock when it comes to Girl Scout cookies. And some people are complaining to the girls about the prices of the cookies. And apparently there's a grocery chain called Aldi. I don't know if you've heard of this, Lucas. Do you shop at Aldi?
I do shop at Aldi.
Okay, yeah. There you go. Well, Lucas is the official spokesperson. Apparently, apparently, Aldi sells knockoff Girl Scout cookies. I really? Is nothing sacred? I can't believe that. Anyways, so that's ridiculous, Aldi, in my humble opinion. Anyways, okay, yeah, they're $5, but you probably have spent more at McDonald's on a Big Mac combo. It goes to a good cause. But not necessarily, according to some people. There is a theory out there, and this is definitely of concern to Catholics. If you're a Catholic family, maybe you have girls, they're in Girl Scouts. Since 2004, there has been a story going around that the Girl Scouts are linked to Planned Parenthood. So if you buy these cookies, you're somehow supporting abortion. Now, this is definitely something that we need to know. Is this true or not? And this started 18 years ago. In 2004, there was an anti-abortion group in Waco, Texas, that took out ads on Christian radio stations talking about this quote-unquote cozy relationship between the Girl Scouts and Planned Parenthood. Well, what was this all based off of? Well, there was something called the Blue Bonnet Council. The Blue Bonnet Council. I've never heard of these people. Do they walk around wearing blue bonnets? I don't know. That'd be really weird. But the Blue Bonnet Council, and they were a group that included some people in the Blue Bonnet Council were Girl Scout troops in the Waco, Texas area at the time. So apparently Blue Bonnet Council logos were on Planned Parenthood brochures at the time. Not Girl Scout logos, but the Blue Bonnet Council logos were on brochures that were handed out at Planned Parenthood locations in Texas, and they were targeted towards tweens and young teenagers, obviously probably promoting things like contraception and abortion. So NBC News apparently looked into this, and the Blue Bonnet Council did not send... apparently the Blue Bonnet Council Girl Scout troops that were involved in this did not in any way fund this program. And actually that very year, it stopped affiliating with Planned Parenthood. So it was kind of a local thing, and the Girl Scouts weren't directly involved. But that story really got legs, and it has really stuck. And to this day, there are Facebook posts out there that talk about a link between the Girl Scouts of America and Planned Parenthood. And this gets passed around thousands and thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands maybe of times, and people saying, well, I'm going to obviously boycott Girl Scout cookies. But just so you know, that's not actually the case. Again, that was a local issue back in 2004 in Waco, Texas, but it certainly wasn't national by the sounds of it. And they've actually released a statement. The Girl Scouts of the USA have released a statement saying, we do not have a relationship or partnership with Planned Parenthood, end of quote. And by the way, you can check that out for yourself. If you don't believe them, you can look up their tax form. Their federal 990 tax form. Every charity has to file one in the United States. Relevant Radio has to file one too. You can look it up as well. And it basically shows you how we spend the money that donors give to the organization. And so their 990 tax form shows that there are no funds from their national organization that went to Planned Parenthood. So just so you know, because a lot of people, that's a legitimate question that people have. And, a lot of people think there is a link, and that's not the case, apparently. So you can look it up for yourself. But apparently, people who are, you know, rightly so against abortion, apparently they've been harassing the kids about that too. And a lot of the parents of these kids are really upset about this because a lot of the kids don't know anything about this. They're very young, some as young as 5 years old. And here's a situation that happened. There was one woman who, so there's a seven-year-old Girl Scout. She and her mom were selling cookies door to door in Wisconsin. And the lady took the cookie form and shoved it into the kid's chest and said, "I don't support programs that support abortion." Okay, well, that's obviously, you know, she thought that they did. Apparently they don't. But you don't do that to a kid. I mean, the kid has, and then she had to, you know, explain to her daughter, the kid's like, "What's abortion?" And so that kind of raises a good question too. And I wonder about this too as a parent. What age is appropriate to start talking to your kids about this? I've thought about this myself. It hasn't really come up yet for me in an explicit way. Because we talk about it on Relevant Radio. We pray, especially during our pledge drive weeks. We start off every hour with a memorare for an end to abortion in the United States. So it's something that comes up. We have a lot of family programs on the show. And so, I don't know. I mean, what's worked for you? How do you talk about this with your kids? 888-914-9149. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. So I do think, obviously, the way you talk to kids, you can't, I find a lot of this reprehensible, talking to them about, oh, you're going to get fat, raising issues that the kid has no idea what's going on. It's a legitimate question to ask for sure. But, and also apparently, obviously there are high school kids who are in the Girl Scouts too. And apparently there's lots of examples in this article about high school girls being harassed by men, you know, they're commenting on their looks and all kinds of catcalls. That's just despicable. That's absolutely despicable. Some people just have absolutely no shame, and the girls actually have to go to a training course. I think it's called Cookie Academy or something like that, where they and their parents learn how to handle the harassment. It's really too bad that they have to undergo that. But anyways, I found it kind of reprehensible. Maybe one of the signs of the apocalypse. Little kids, little girls selling cookies are getting yelled at, harassed by people. What in the world kind of society are we living in? Anyway, so there you have it. Beer and cookies. What else you want to talk about? 888-914-9149. We'll be right back with your phone calls and much more. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Back again, I use my back against the wall. Never caught on y'all, never count on y'all, always count on God. He's done miracles on me.
This is The Cale Clark Show.
Welcome back to The Cale Clark Show. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. No Child Left Behind. We were talking about Girl Scouts. Some of the girls, unfortunately, selling cookies, which I think are delicious, are getting harassed for all kinds of different reasons. For people are telling these kids, you're going to get fat, you're going to get diabetes, body shaming these kids, not cool. Some are also alleging that the Girl Scouts have a connection with Planned Parenthood. And that was the first time I'd ever heard of this. I don't know much about this. You probably know way more about this than I do. But according to investigations that have been done, there is no link, and they don't give money to Planned Parenthood. You can look at their tax filing, their 990 form, see what they're actually involved with. So this is all kind of news to me. And I know a lot of you guys out there probably are parents of a girl who's in Girl Scouts, or maybe you were in Scouts yourself. And I think we have a few people on the line who want to talk about that. Let's go to Ann, who's calling from West Stepford, New Jersey. Hello, Ann.
Hi, Cale. I love your show.
Hi. Thank you.
I just wanted to say I'm not sure exactly about the Planned Parenthood connection, but for many years, even when I was a little girl, and I'm 61, when I was not a little girl, but like an adolescent, they started with the Equal Rights Amendment in Philadelphia, and like at least in my troop, and which was, it was Christian. We signed Christmas songs, Christian songs. We met at a United Methodist Church, and I mean, I'm Catholic, but mm-hmm. and also Catholic yep. parishes had it. But anyway, it was always that way. Not always, but since that long ago. And we had to do this Equal Rights Amendment badge, and then a lot of Catholic parishes in Philadelphia stopped, carrying the Girl Scouts. So it's been for a lot of long time. So what I do when I'm outside of my local supermarket is mm-hmm. I also know because my friends have had girls in Girl Scouts, and they only get 50 cents on each $5 box that goes to the troop, and the rest wow. of it goes to the Planned Parenthood USA. So my solution is to just give them $5 or $10 for their troop so they can do their camperies and all those different things that I remember doing, and fun things, survival things, and all those kind of stuff, like all that thing. But they do have little flower things, like every yeah. St. Teresa. A lot of Catholic parishes have gone to other girl groups. And so there is definitely a connection with pro-abortion that on the national level, but each little local troop, who knows?
So you're saying that 50 cents of every box sold goes to the troop, and the rest of it goes to Planned Parenthood? Is that what you're saying?
Right. And my good friends have said that. They know that. So what I would always do is just give to their girls could do the camping and things like that. Just give to that troop they get the whole $5 or $10 instead.
Well, according to this investigation, they don't give any money to Planned Parenthood at the national level, according to their tax filings. So I don't know where you're getting that information. I want to know what the truth is about
Planned
this.
Planned Parenthood, but a lot of this, it was happening when I was a little girl. I mean, it wasn't Planned Parenthood, but it was, you know, these different badges that you were working on were very, like, uber feminist, about, women's right to choose and all that kind of stuff. And Roe v. Wade happened when I was in seventh grade. Yeah.
So that was like your experience of the Scouts in the 70s. That's interesting. And I wonder if that's different now. I don't know. Maybe somebody else could shed some light on that. Thank you for the call, Ann. I appreciate that. And calling from New Jersey. We're going to go now to Don, who is calling from Cranston, Rhode Island. Hello, Don.
Hey, Kale. So I wanted to kind of add to what the previous caller phoned in about, although my story is mm-hmm. a little bit different. So I think that there's validity to what she says. I was in the Girl Scouts too, and there is a lot of feminist ideology that's kind of pumped and pushed in a very subtle undercurrent. You do always have to follow the paper trail, and it sounds like you did your due diligence that way. So my comment is on something a little different, but it's kind of on the same wavelength. So I was a daycare teacher, head teacher, loved kids. I love kids all the time, but I was a head teacher of three classrooms, little toddlers. These are little toddler kids. And so I was, I had to leave my job for bed rest because I was carrying twins. So I couldn't return to my job, and I loved it. And I was up in my attic one day going through a box, came across all my curriculum. And I was fondly looking at, some of the stuff I did. And we had professional in-service days. And so I was looking, just reading some of the literature from those particular conferences that I went to. Mm-hmm. And I was horrified by who they were sponsored by. I looked at the bottom of the page, and they were sponsored by Planned Parenthood. And let me just say that some of the things that I was, God plucked me out of that job, as much as I loved teaching, because some of the things that were being fostered there, I spoke up to the director and said, this cannot be with little children. And one other teacher and myself were the only two that disagreed vehemently about some of the things that they were promoting, which was not family friendly, not Catholic or Christian friendly at all. So
this is in a daycare center,
like maybe not out in your face, or maybe that particular daycare center, which is a chain, always situated towards in medical settings, like hospitals, near my hospitals and big place. So I just wanted to kind of put my two cents in on that.
Wow. And that's, this is why I've been noticing a lot of chatter about this. And obviously there's been a pretty big movement over the last little while towards homeschooling. And the homeschooling community has gotten more and more vocal because of things like this, things that are getting into the curriculums, in daycares, in public schools. And parents are sometimes seen as the enemy at times. I don't want to make it sound too extreme, but that's the way a lot of teachers, public school teachers, are looking at parents as sort of in opposition to how they want to educate your child. So thanks very much for sharing that story, Don. I appreciate that. Yep. And I appreciate the call. That was Don calling from Rhode Island. We're going to go now to Damon in Daly City, California. Hello, Damon.
Hello, Gail. And I have a similar situation, but a lot of innocence.
Okay.
My wife is at the hospital, pediatrics, NICU. keep all in there depending on the need. And her coworkers are selling, nurses are selling, because they have kids, and so the mom ends up selling it, not their kids. And my wife, I asked my wife to buy it, and there's a little stitch of a conflict there. She did buy three boxes, and she said, hey, what can I do? It's part of my relationships. So I asked her, to insert a note with money. Pay the money, but insert a note, and you say something like what's on your heart. Image and likeness, Genesis 1:31. It's good six times, but humanity is very good. And it will all bite into our soul so that we'll think about these things for the rest of our life. You don't have to confront it like Christ head on until you're prepared. Between that, while you're not quite prepared, put a little note. Divine humor, make someone laugh.
I think you're right, Damon. You know, just to hop in there, yeah, humor's a good conversation starter for sure. And the idea of slipping in a Bible verse, you know, here's the $5 and here's a Bible verse that's priceless. It's kind of an interesting strategy. We're going to go now to Mary Alice, who's calling from Columbus, Ohio. Hello, Mary Alice.
Hello, Cale. I am a former Girl Scout, and like two or three callers ago, I'm a little bit older than she is, and I, over the past 20 or 30 years, I have become very disenchanted with what I have seen in the actual girls themselves, wherever I would be, and they're selling their cookies. They were very behaving more like boys, and I kept thinking, where is the feminine side of them? And I was raised at a Catholic grade school. We had Girl Scouts, and we were also associated. It was more Christ-centered in all of the campgrounds where we went. For camping, we had a priest come out to have a field mass for us on Sunday mornings. Yeah, and because it was so closely tied to that parish. I'm from Cleveland.
Mary Alice, can I ask you this question? Do you think that in that sense, like, there was more of a religious element in the Scouts, like masses and things like that back in the day? Do you think it's kind of a reflection of society in general, the Scouts? Like, obviously, if there are a lot of Catholics, a lot of practicing Christians in the Scouts, that's going to like add to the flavor of the organization. But if they're not, as society's become more secularized, as it were, do you think that's kind of just more of a mirror of society, maybe? Or
yes, I would say yes. And I have not bought a Girl Scout cookie in maybe 20 years, partly because people at work were selling them for their daughters, and I kept thinking, what is wrong with the little girl going around from house to house to sell them like I had to? My parents wouldn't sell the cookies for me. I agree with you that it has just taken a nosedive as far as the culture goes. They don't have it. It's not Christ-centered. And there are now other groups, American Heritage Girls, at the particular parish where I attend, where I belong here in Columbus. And they are very, I've talked to some of the troop leaders. I said, please get them closer to our Blessed Mother and our Lord. And because it is there at St. Patrick's. Well, you know now where I go.
Well, thanks, Mary Alice. I really appreciate that call. Yeah, I haven't heard of that group, and that's a really good question. Are there Catholic alternatives to the Girl Scouts? And legitimate questions. These are things I should probably know about as a girl dad, and, you know, what kind of feminism are there? I think there's a good, healthy, biblical Catholic feminism. The feminine genius, as John Paul II talked about. But yeah, this is maybe a topic we'll have to carry over into tomorrow. Unfortunately, we're out of time for today. So everybody who's on the line, why don't you call me back tomorrow? And I want your thoughts on this as well. So hope you have a great evening. It's been the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Hope your Lent is off to a good start. I'll be praying for you. Please pray for me. Tim Marie's up next, followed by Father Rocky and the Family Rosary Across America. Lucas Holt produced. Patrick took your calls. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.